some point we would have thought was inappropriate. There are economic rewards for that in a lot of instances. And so it's problematic. Like, for me, I feel like the social norms that are out there now in terms of speech and how we're going to talk with one another have gotten so twisted that it just is, it's kind of mind-boggling about, like, what do we do to fix it? Like, how do we make this better?
We're chatting with Jenny Lamb, a professor in the communications department at the University of Delaware. And is she an expert in free speech? Is shaking her head and wondering, what are we going to do? What about the rest of us, Jenny?
But strangely, I am still somewhat optimistic about the future, partly because I think, for instance, we have come to realize how important journalism is to a democracy, and journalism has lost its funding models to a large degree because of the introduction of the internet and other, and the news is expected to make a profit right now because they're owned by corporations that really don't care that much about journalism. They just want to be profitable. And so I think that there's this move to try to come up with alternate funding models for journalism. And I think that that has a lot of promise. I also think that my college students, I'm teaching a class on free speech and civil discourse right now. They are hungry for better. They really want something different in our public sphere. And I think that desire and that perspective gives me a lot of hope.
How do you help them take that step towards civil discourse and not the kind of language that leads to your different division and hate?
Yeah, I kind of sound like an economist right now, but I try to talk to them a lot about how the economic system of media particularly works, and how in many ways they are right now the product that's being sold.
That's a great point.
And so that they can choose to do something differently. I also always have them, like in the free speech and civil discourse class, I'm having each of them follow a different organization that's trying to improve things on either free speech, civil discourse, or both. And so I want them to see that there are people out there trying to change this and that they can get involved in trying to be sort of activist in terms of making things better. And I hope that they will take what I'm teaching them and talk to their friends about it and talk to their parents about it. And that, you know, through that kind of spread, I might make a little bit of a difference for them.
That's very interesting that you said talk to your friends.
I had a really interesting experience. My mom and my sister were living in rural Minnesota, and I went to visit them, and I flew into the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport and then took a shuttle up to their town. And there were only two other people on the bus, the driver and another guy, and they were both Republicans. They were both older than I was. And one of them started in on something, and I thought, oh my God, this is going to be a really, really long bus ride. But it turned out that we had an excellent conversation, not because we agreed on things, but because we listened to each other about, like, for the purpose of understanding instead of for the purpose of trying to change each other's minds. And when I got off before the other guy did, he actually thanked me for having that conversation with him. And I thought, wow, that just doesn't happen very often anymore that I get to have a conversation like that. How could we do that more? Like, it just needs to happen more often.
It's really refreshing to me, coming to volunteer at the Carnegie Mellon radio station, to see that they have this tradition with the free speech fence,
yeah,
which leads to Republican students and Democratic students talking with each other and talking with Carnegie Mellon administration about what is the civil discourse way of expressing your opinion on that fence.
Yeah. I think universities, although they are under fire a lot right now, universities have a really unique role that they can play because of the expectation of what is supposed to happen at universities. And I think universities are very smart to talk about the First Amendment at times when there's not a crisis on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And so that people are used to thinking and talking about these things. I find personally at the University of Delaware, sometimes there's an emphasis on the First Amendment from the administration only when they're telling the students why they have to allow the hate group to be there. And so I've tried to do programming every semester to do something, but I still feel like sometimes we're just tone deaf about, you're going to turn people off about the First Amendment if the only time you talk about it is to tell them why the university has to let the hate group be there on campus. Like, of course they're going to hate it at that point.
Isn't there enough link between violence and hate speech that there could be some, shall we say, moderation?
No, really. Because if right. It's a public university, the hate group I'm thinking of in particular was pretty smart and would come and stand on city property instead of on university property. But the city property was right in the middle of the university property. So they would come and stand there, and they weren't doing anything. They weren't threatening violence. They weren't, doing anything physically violent to anybody. And so they could be there. And the university did not do a great job at explaining.
Again, guess that thing for the class that you're currently teaching, the idea of civil discourse, to be able to listen to somebody, actually listen to what somebody who disagrees with you is saying.
Yeah.
And try to get them to listen to you and
yep.
at least agree on your common humanity.
Yes. That's it. That really is it right there, is that we need to remember each other's humanity. So much would be solved in the world if we could all remember that. I will say, though, I don't want to say that civil discourse is the answer, because sometimes people use the concept of civility to just enforce politeness rather than having actual civil discourse where you allow there to be difference and try, like you said, to try to understand each other, not necessarily to change each other's perspectives. Sometimes people who are behaving, for instance, protesting to try to change something, get told that they're being uncivil, when in fact they're not. They're just challenging something. And so I'm hesitant to say civil discourse is the answer, because sometimes that gets used against people, too.
Well, it gets used against people, but true civil discourse where you're listening to each other.
Yes.
And giving each other the opportunity to speak.
Yes.
And giving each other the opportunity to listen. That's really one of the keys.
It absolutely is.
What this, I think, gets to, Jenny, is we're talking mostly about free speech, is how people's point of view really affects what they say and what they don't want to hear.
Yeah. I'm such a First Amendment advocate because I think we need the government to be consistent about that. So when I hear Trump saying that, people with certain, who protest the Palestinian situation can be evicted from the country, that to me is really, really problematic, because it is inserting government perspective on what can and can't be said. And if there is a bedrock of the First Amendment, it is that the government cannot discriminate based on the viewpoint that you are saying. And I don't feel like that's being respected right now.
To be fair, even though Professor Jenny Lamb mentioned a specific president, it's happened under other administrations
as well. Oh, absolutely. Yes, it has.
Both parties.
Yes. I just feel like it's being done in a very aggressive way right now.
Right, and it's where we're living now.
Yeah.
Jenny, this has been great to catch up with you. Thank you
so much.
Good
to see you again.
Thanks so much, Jenny Lamb from the University of Delaware's Department of Communication.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
This is WRCT Pittsburgh. You're listening to Anatomy of the Ear, an annual event where we play our favorite genres for you. Tune in to Anatomy of the Ear Friday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 4 a.m. here on WRCT Pittsburgh. Regular programming will return Monday morning. For the next hour, prepare yourself for politics, tension, settled scores, Manichaean struggle. Prepare yourself for boss battles.
Thank you.
welcome back. You just heard Deku from the Fight Crab OST with the theme Great Monster. Before that was a song that is credited with beginning jungle as a genre, if you can believe it, from the Wolverine Adamantium Rage Super Nintendo OST Tri-Fusion or Boss 2. Before that, something from Hylix. I had to do it to him. Hylix 2, the OST. An excerpt from Fancy Meat Computer, a boss theme. Prior to that, I had Battles with Wall Street. Now, that's not boss music, but doesn't it sound like it? Prior to that, Shin Megami Tensei 4, OST, Battle B2, the boss battle theme. When things get real in the world of Shin Megami Tensei. Now, we have something before that with its own wiki. Not its own game, unfortunately. The Tuba Brothers Battle Theme. Prior to that, it was Cadillacs and Dinosaurs OST, the beloved arcade version, Box 4 intro. Then we had Pixel Noir with Boss Fighting for Truth, the Maxo remix of that track. And of course, we had the Slumbering Dragon, a very James Bond-sounding theme from the Dark Souls 2 soundtrack. And we kick things off with, from Solar Ash, the Forgotten Thresher. Anatomy of the Ear is supported by Sidecar Bakery in North Oakland. Sidecar is an independent coffee shop with a full coffee bar, ready-made breakfast sandwiches, breakfast pastries, savory hand pies, cakes, and pies made in the bakery next door. Sidecar offers a place to study, eat, and hang with friends in a cafe setting. Open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday. 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday. For more information, visit their website at sidecar412.com. Coming up next, it's Yik.